Ka Vartma Vritir Adanad Davir Anga Vati Vishnu Kalasi Ani Mishon Makara Chak Karna Udvigna Mina Yugalang Dvija Pankti Shachir Asana Bringa Nikarang Sara In Mukam Te. Kavartma Vritti Radhanada Virangavati. Vishnu Kalasya Nimishan Makarau Chakarna. Udvigna Mina Yugalam Dvija Pankti Shochir. Asana bringa nikaram sarahin mukam te. Kavartma vrittir haranadda virangavati. Vishnu Kalasya Nimishon Makarau Chakarna. Udvigna Mena Yugalang Dvija Pankti Shochir. Asana Bringa Nikaram Sarahin Mukam Te. Kavartma Vrittir Haranadda Viranga Vahati. Vishnu Kalasya Nimishon Makarau Chakarna. Udvigna Mena Yugalam Dvija Pankti Shochir. Asana Bringa Nikaram Sarahin Mukhaṁ Te. Okay. Ladies. Vrittiradanatta Pranga Bhati. Bringa nikaram saro in mukam te. Okay. Ka. What? Va. And. Atma vrittahi. Food for maintenance of the body. Adanat. By the chewing of betel. Havehi, a pure sacrificial ingredients. Anga, my dear friend. Vati, emanate. Vishnaho, of Lord Vishnu. Kola, expansion of the body. Ase, you are. Animisha, without blinking. Unmakarao, two brilliant sharks. Cha, also. Karnao, two ears. Udvigna, restless. Amina Yugalam, possessing two fish. Dvija Pankti, of lines of teeth. Shochihi, beauty. Asana, nearby. Bringanikaram, possessing swarms of bumblebees. Swarms means a lot of bumblebees. Sada iti, like a lake. Mukham, face. Te, your. So another romantic verse. So translation. My dear friend, what do you eat to maintain your body? Because you are chewing betel, a pleasing scent is emanating from your mouth. This proves that you always eat the remnants of food offered to Vishnu. Indeed, you must also be an expansion of Lord Vishnu's body. Sounds like he's really in Maya. Your face is as beautiful as a pleasing lake. Your jeweled earrings resemble two brilliant sharks with unblinking eyes like those of Vishnu. And your eyes resemble two restless fish. Simultaneously, therefore, two sharks and two restless fish are swimming in the lake of your face. Besides them, the white rows of your teeth seem like rows of very beautiful swans in the water, and your scattered hair resembles swarms of bumblebees following the beauty of your face. You men should try that sometimes, and ladies. The devotee purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The devotees of Lord Vishnu are also his expansions. They are called Vivinangsha. Lord Vishnu is offered all kinds of sacrificial ingredients, and because devotees always eat prasada, the remnants of his food, the scent of sacrificial ingredients emanates not only from Vishnu, but also from the devotees who eat the remnants of his food or the food of his devotees. Agnidra considered Purvachiti an expansion of Lord Vishnu because of the pleasing scent of her body. Aside from that, because of her jeweled earrings, shaped like sharks, because of her scattered hair, resembling bumblebees mad after the scent of her body, and because of the white rows of her teeth, which resembled swans, Agnidra compared Purvachiti's face to a beautiful lake decorated with lotus flowers, fish, swans, and bumblebees. So kahut as kavatma vrittiradana daviranga vati vishno kalasya nimishon makarau chikarno ahud vignamina yugalam dvishapanti shochir asana bringa nikaram sarahin mukam te. So om ganata mananda shah gananjana shlakaya chakshur unmeditam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha. So before getting into the topic of being in maya, there's another interesting, several interesting topics here. One topic is how a devotee becomes more attractive by taking up devotional service. Like Prabhupada commented one time that before you joined the movement, your beauty was there, but it was covered. And now you've joined the movement and it's become uncovered. In other words, the mode of goodness has now become prominent in the devotee's body. And they, when you see the other modes of nature, like the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion, then the person is not so attractive. Sometimes you see someone, for example, who's drunk. And a drunk person is definitely not that attractive, right? Or sometimes you see these magazines with pictures of, you know, so-called handsome men or beautiful women on the cover, and it's just like, they just look like hell because they're in the mode of passion. And actually, you can see someone's mode of nature by looking at their face. Even we mentioned the other day that there's devotees sometimes in different modes of nature, according to Lord Kapiladeva in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And you can see their faces, you know, someone who is envious or proud. You know, that's, of course, a mixture of ignorance and passion. And you see their face looks like, wow. Their beauty or whatever is not there. And even sometimes you see on the internet some devotees criticizing other devotees. They take it as their dharma to commit Vaishnava aparadhas. And they go on the internet and they say, no, we're going to show how this person was in maya. It's just like, wow, they look like Ravana or something like that. So the facial characteristics and the bodily features change according to the modes of nature that you happen to be manifesting. So by Krishna consciousness, you actually become more beautiful. And we see with Prabhupada, for example, because he was completely Krishna conscious, that he glowed. And there's that one story that there was a man who was seeing Prabhupada from a distance in New York, and he commented to the devotees, he's glowing. In other words, it was effulgent. And actually, Prabhupada was like that. And when we first saw Prabhupada, that the first, you know, first impression you had that, you know, Prabhupada must have been very, very tall, like 8 feet, you know, like 3 meters high or something like that. And Prabhupada was stature very short. But then you'd look at Prabhupada and it was like he was a giant. You know, he's glowing. It was just, you just didn't notice the stature anymore of Prabhupada. And everything that Prabhupada did, all of his actions, were beautiful. It was like poetry in motion. Just like if you go to see, you shouldn't go to see a ballet, of course. you know, it's poetry, you know, they're acting. But Prabhupada, it was so beautiful that I remember sitting behind Prabhupada while he was chanting Jai Ranamata before Bhagavatam class and just watching his hands. I was just, you know, I was mesmerized. Oh, look at that. And then sometimes, I mean, I hate to admit it, I would even just watch the hairs in his ears. It's interesting, like, it's described that in the Vedic system that if one has long hairs in the ears, it's an indication of intelligence. In the Western world, they just shave the hair in the ears. You get a special buzzer, you know, you shave it. But Prabhupada never shaved it, and so he had hair coming out of his ears. And it was just beautiful. I mean, what can I say? I mean, everything about Prabhupada was beautiful because he was, we can't even say the material mode of goodness. He was in the Vishuddha Sattva, and his body was completely spiritual. So devotees actually become more and more attractive by performing devotional service. So it's the ultimate, for you ladies, ultimate beauty recipe. You don't have to get plastic surgery, you know, when you get older, or just layers and layers of makeup, or make your nails long. Like one time I was in an airplane, and there was a lady sitting next to me. You can't control that when you're flying. You can't say to the person who takes your ticket, don't want any women sitting next to me. They wouldn't understand that. And she was getting ready to land. She was putting her nails on so she would be beautiful. And the nails were just like this long. I just said, oh my God. I said, I hope she doesn't get angry with me, you know. I'll be in trouble. You know, it's frightening. It's like Sirpanaka. Sirpanaka, the word actually means long, curvy nails. So people have this passionate standard of beauty or ignorant standard of beauty, you know, with this big lips or something like that. Or, I mean, certain cultures, they actually have a standard of beauty that make the lips this big. Seriously. They're called ubangis. They put a plate in the little girl's mouth and they make it bigger and bigger and bigger as she gets older. Or they make the feet little tiny. They tie up the feet. And they have all these stupid standards of beauty. Or handsomeness or something like that. Or the men, you know, they take these steroids and the muscles are there, you know, and they basically can't move because the muscles are so big. Isn't it, you know, Mr. World or something? I mean, it's so stupid. And of course, in India now, the standard of beauty is that you have to be fat. You know, someone walks around really fat and you say, he's really healthy. Because it's a sign that you have enough money to feed yourself. Anyway, it's also a sign that you have diabetes and, you know, also heart disease and everything. So there's also these different standards of material beauty. But really the mode of goodness is the way to go. In other words, you eat food in the mode of goodness and you have activities in the mode of goodness. You control your anger. You serve Krishna and do arti. And then even if you're like 60, 70, 80 years old, you're going to look good. Transcendental. Of course, they'll still have some wrinkles. But you'll look good because the beauty will emanate from you. So that's the first point here that I wanted to make. And that's the point Srila Prabhupada made in his purport, that if someone eats prasadam, then naturally one comes to the mode of goodness and the beauty is naturally there. Another point here is that all these words that Agnidra is using are really, you know, from my perspective, they're really funny. Like if someone said that about me, I'd wonder about them. But anyway, if someone said that about me, if someone praises my body, it's not very useful as far as impressing me. It says, Maharaj, oh, you got a beautiful nose and nice ears. And nice toes. Maybe lotus feet would be all right. But but it's just like, you know, it doesn't impress me. But you see also the difference between men and women, too. That the women's, not all of you, I'm not criticizing anyone in particular. Women generally can be impressed if you say that to them. For example, when some devotee brings his mother to the temple, I always say, oh, you brought your wife. Or you brought your sister. And his mother says, what a nice sannyasa he is. I want him to be my guru. One time I made the mistake, someone did bring his wife, and I said, it's nice you brought your mother. And that was almost the end of my life, that particular day. So, But so I mean, there are different natures, you know, and the women, they can be impressed by that particular type of talk. You know, you have such nice ears, you have such nice eyes, your teeth are like rows of stars, like that. So that's why in Vedic culture, the women need to be protected. Because the women, I mean, this is an interesting point. I mean, we talk about the women's position, relationship to men and everything like that in culture. And sometimes people talk about intelligence, you know, less intelligent, more intelligence. But as far as the material standard of intelligence, like IQ, you know what an IQ standard is? The women are equally intelligent. I mean, sometimes more intelligent. You know, the brain is well developed. But the problem is sometimes you can be overcome by this thing called vanity. You know what vanity is? Vanity means like attachment to the body, you know, the way the body is, you know. Not many men wear earrings. Of course, now it's increasing. But and, you know, you see this all the time. But, you know, the ladies are definitely more interested in decorating the body. I mean, I'm not just making this up. And, you know, Prabhupada did say one of the main things, main activities of the ladies is combing the hair. That's why we, in general, don't have such long hair, so we don't have to spend time. Before I joined the movement, I did spend a lot of time combing my hair, straightening it out, because it was really curly. I would even sleep with something over my head so the hair wouldn't get curly. So the vanity was there. But so one of the things about brahmachari life is to decrease the vanity. That's why in the traditional ashrams, they didn't have mirrors. And actually, Prabhupada was asked one time by a devotee, did Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, how did he put on his tilak without a mirror? Was it straight? And Prabhupada said, yes, it was straight. You know, you learn after a while how to put on tilak without a mirror. I haven't learned that yet. So, because the vanity should be decreased, both for men and women, it should be decreased. But the ladies need to be protected because the men can exploit. So it's a bad quality of men, too, that the men can exploit the women by telling them these different things, like Agnidra is telling this Purvachitti, and she's just like an ecstasy. She's thinking, wow. You know, even though this guy is an earthly guy and she's from the heavens, you know, there's actually a difference. Usually the Heavenly Society girls don't really hang out with us. Thank God. Or else we'd be in trouble. Like Visramitra, he was meditating and, you know, then Menaka came down. You know, Menaka, the Heavenly Society girl, came down and he was in trouble. And he was a lot more austere than any of us and a lot more determined than any of us. So he came down. He was meditating and he opened his eye, heard her ankle bells, and he just went, Hari Bol, you know, whatever. And that was the end of his meditation. And then he had this this girl, Shakuntala. Anyway, there's a whole story about that in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the Heavenly Society girls don't come down. Usually they don't mix with the earth people. But in this case, Purvachitti came down and she was really impressed by Maharaj Agnidra. And of course, he was impressed by her beauty too. And ultimately, we read at the end of this particular chapter that he went back to Purvachitti at the end of this. You know, he was so impressed. He was just thinking about her, you know, after she went back to the heavenly planets. And it was just like, yum yum vapi smaram bhavan yajatayante kalevaram. At the time of death, you know, he went to the heavenly planets to join her, and they lived happily ever after, at least until the end of the millennium. So therefore, we have to protect the women in society so that the men don't cheat them. And the men, of course, shouldn't be cheated by this bodily beauty. So the men and the ladies both have to be protected in different ways. So this is why we have, you know, some separation between men and women. Of course, it should be equal facility. I know there's some really conservative people in the movement who may not agree with me, but there should be equal facility, equal service, and everything like that. But one has to be very careful, because here we're also, another topic is, that our third topic I wanted to get to, is how to avoid falling into Maya. How to avoid just like looking in someone's eyes and thinking they're the most beautiful person in the world. Except looking in Krishna's eyes. Like that story of Shripad Ramanujacharya. Shripad Ramanujacharya was one day, he had a Rath Yatra ceremony. They had Kirtan, Harinam Kirtan. And as they were having Harinam Kirtan, there was one man who was looking in his girlfriend's eyes, and he was hypnotized. Like they say in the hypnosis, look in my eyes, you're getting sleepy. So, look in my eyes, you're getting lusty. Anyway, so, here, this man, he was hypnotized by his girlfriend. She didn't deliberately do it, it was just the nature of fire and butter. You just get ghee. So anyway, so he was hypnotized by his girlfriend. And not only hypnotized, he was fanning her. Like we have an RT here for the deities. You know, you see the chamara? And the pujari is going like this. So he was going like that with the chamara. And he's holding an umbrella over her head and walking backwards, fanning her. Just like we have a Rath Yatra. You see Lord Jagannath, you're fanning Lord Jagannath, and everyone's going, Jai Jagannath. So he was going, Jai Sweetie Pie, or whatever. Just walking backwards. And at the same time, there was an actual Rath Yatra going on. And the brahmacharis were just going, huh? What's this? This is Maya Yatra. Not Rath Yatra. And they were making fun of this poor guy. You know, he was in Maya. Should make fun of someone who's in Maya. It's not proper. Someone's in Maya, we should be compassionate, not just like, oh, he's in Maya. Like that. So they were stopped from their laughing by their spiritual master, Shripad Ramanujacharya. He said, don't laugh at this guy. I want to find out why he's doing what he's doing. And so, all right, so he calls the guy over and says, you know, please come over. His name was Donardas, actually. And he asked him, why are you doing this? Don't you understand everyone's laughing at you? It looks ridiculous. And the man said, I know, but her eyes, they are just so enchanting. And Ramanujacharya, instead of saying, you fool, you rascal, you idiot, you know, don't you understand? These eyes, they're just made of vitreous humor. You know, that's what the eyes say. And then going through one of the standard brahmachari classes you have in ISKCON, this body is just a bag of stool, mucus, and urine. And you peel the skin off, and that's what you get is beautiful. Liquid beauty. I'm sure you've all heard those classes, right? And that doesn't make anyone detached. I mean, like you see the doctors, they're doing operations, opening up someone's body, and the next minute they're pinching the nurse right next to the operation. So just seeing the nature of this body doesn't detach you from the body. Otherwise, doctors would be the most renounced sannyasis. But it doesn't work like that. Isn't it? I mean, what to speak of morticians? Mortician, you know what a mortician is? I mean, someone who takes care of the dead bodies. They would never get married. They would just say, yuck. But they're not detached. So Ramanujacharya, Shripad Ramanujacharya, understanding this, he preached to him in a very good way. He said, all right, I understand she has beautiful eyes. So if I can show you someone who has more beautiful eyes, Will you like that? And Donardas, the man, said, wow, yeah. So he's thinking, you know, there's another girl. Ramanujacharya is going to introduce me to a much more beautiful girl than my girlfriend. He was just like, Hannibal, you know, I can't wait. So Ramanujacharya came, or he came, excuse me. He came that night to see Ramanujacharya, and Ramanujacharya took him to see the deities. And the deity he took him to see was named Virata Dharaja, which means the wish-fulfilling deity. And so he went to see the deity, and he looked at the deity's eyes, and that was it. He fell in love. Bah. Wow. That was the solution. Raso Varjam, Raso Pyasa, Param Jishrani Bhartate, a higher taste. So that's why, in general, we should not be preaching in a negative way about Maya. Because when you preach in a negative way, you become more attached to something that you're negative about. That's just natural psychology. Like I was talking to someone last night about controlling their diet. And they said, does that mean I have to give up this? You know, sweets, this and that. I said, no. You don't have to give up any of those things. Concentrate practically what you want to achieve in terms of your goals in life. I said, you want to be healthy? Of course he said, yes. And so that's a goal. You want to be Krishna conscious? Yes. So when you have these goals, then it's easy, or easier, to give up certain things. And it's also easier to wake up early in the morning. You know, sometimes people ask, you know, because everybody knows I wake up early in the morning. I mean, every morning, Mangalarti. It's like a religious principle. So it's because I have a goal. Not because I don't like to sleep. Especially here during the winter, it's nice to sleep. So, isn't that nice? In the summer, it's not so nice to sleep because it's too hot. But in the winter, you know, it's cold. You feel real good under your covers. Haranyakashipu. So... but because I really wanted to be Krishna conscious and please Prabhupada. You know, I think about that every, as often as possible. I can't say every moment. But I think about that, you know, oh, this will please Prabhupada. So that's my goal. And when you have that goal, then automatically you do the negatives, you know, what you're not supposed to do. They automatically fall into place. So it's really easy. Krishna consciousness is easy if you take it like that. And it's miserable if you take it as a negative. You know, can't do this, can't do that. Oh my God. And the GBC passed a rule, no chocolate. What's happening to life? You can't chant Rade, Rade. That's funny. We were talking to some Brajbasi yesterday, he came to see me, and he said he walked into an ISKCON temple and with a whole group of knights devotees, and they were chanting Rade Rade, and they got chastised by the devotees in the temple. Don't chant Rade Rade. You know, that's very disrespectful, you know. If you tell people from a different sampradaya not to chant the names of Rade Rade. Even I went to I was in Govardhan. As in Govardhan, you get accustomed to chanting Rade Rade a lot. Because that's how you greet people. You don't say Dobardhan. Or even Govardhan, you don't say. You say Rade Rade. And so then I went there to the GBC meeting in Mayapur. And you know, I forgot I was in Mayapur. And I said to one of my godbrothers, Rade Rade. And I got, I thought I was going to get killed, you know. You offender, you rascal, you demon, you know, Rade Rade. Anyway, so we have all these do nots, like Prabhupada said, donuts, you know, like donuts. Donuts, you know, the things you eat, you know, with the holes in them like that. So, you don't really want to concentrate on those. You want to concentrate on the positive things. You know, the beauty of the deity. So, When you see Krishna's beauty. In fact, Prabhupada said that is the cure for lust. Because here in this verse, we're talking about lust. You know, someone's becoming lusty. It's like there's Valentine's Day, you know. You have Valentine's Day here? It's February, right? Dangerous day. I go to Govardhan on that day and just do Nirjan Bhajan. Prabhupada said the cure for Mr. Lust. Prabhupada actually gave lust a name, appellation, Mr. Because there's Cupid, Kandarpa. And he has arrows of form, taste, smell, touch, etc. You understand? And he's Ananga. He is without a body. In other words, no gross body. So you can't see him when he comes. He's just like hiding there behind the pillar. Like Lord Nrsimhadev was hiding in the pillar. So Cupid is hiding in the pillar. And so Prabhupada said the cure is deity worship. Seeing the beautiful form of the deity. I mean, that's really the cure, because we're meant to see someone beautiful. And who is more beautiful than Krishna? As Rupa Goswami says, if you at all desire to enjoy society, friendship, and love in this world, don't go to see the smiling boy Govinda playing his flute on the banks of the Keshi Ghat. So if you go to see him, then everything else appears in comparison to be not so attractive. When you eat prasadam, then food is not offered to Krishna. It's not so attractive anymore. Says you, why should I eat that? So that's really our principle of renunciation. And it really works. And then you can become like this man, Nanradas. He became very renounced. Of course, he did get married to his girlfriend. And he was so renounced that... I guess I can tell the story to finalize the class. He was so renounced that there was a test he had of his renunciation, even though he was married to this most beautiful girl with the beautiful eyes and everything like that. And what happened is, once upon a time, the brahmacharis in the ashram were making fun of him because he was married. I remember it was like that in the early days of the movement. If someone got married, you said, well, they blooped. Even if someone moved out of the temple, they blooped. They were gone into the clutches of Maya. You know, never to come back. The deep, dark well. The bottomless pit. You know? So, it's like, you know, a fate worse than death. So, it was like that in the beginning days of the movement. I mean, it was pretty wild. People say that when Prabhupada was present, everything was nice. Mm-mm. We had more problems then, because we were all just a bunch of babies. So the brahmacharis, they were making fun of Dhanuras. Oh, he's married. He got married to his girlfriend. You know, what kind of devotee is he? And Ramanujacharya wanted to show them how renounced he was. He said to the brahmacharis, "You go." Actually, he had two tests, but I'll tell the first test. First test, what he did is he waited till all the brahmacharis were sleeping. And what he did is he took some of their stuff away while they were sleeping. And they woke up, they all started fighting each other. So that was the first test. He said, see, you're really attached. And then he said, I'll show you how detached this householder is. He said to the brahmacharis, wait until Dhanardas's wife is alone, Dhanardas will be with me, and steal some of her jewelry away. So the brahmacharis crept over to the house, wait until Dhanardas's wife was sleeping, and even they took the jewelry off of her body. And then she turned over, you know, made believe she was turning over, and Haribo. So she turned over, and they ran away because they got scared. So Dhanardas came back home, and the brahmacharis were watching to see what was going to happen through the window, you know. They didn't have webcams at that particular time. They were looking through the window, and he looked at his wife, and he said, how come you only have jewelry on half your body? And she described the brahmacharis were taking that half, And I turn over so they can take the brewery from the other half of my body. And he chastised his wife. Why did you scare away those brahmacharis? You should have given them everything. And the brahmacharis saw that, and Ramanujacharya said, when he heard the story, he said, see how detached he is. So we cannot judge someone's detachment or devotion based upon the external situation they're in, the ashram they're in, or whether it's a man or a woman or anything like that. You just can't. That's actually an offense to judge a Vaishnava according to his body, or even imperfections in the body, or even accidental, you know, deviation or past activities that they perform. So we have to be very careful about judging a Vaishnava externally. I mean, look at Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was married with so many children, and he was greatest, most detached Vaishnava, isn't it? Of course, there is some interesting story about how Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur jokingly would chastise his father. He called his father Stri Sangi. That means you're attached to women. But that was a pastime between two great personalities. So, in any case, we should judge or not judge Vaishnavas externally. We should judge based on their level of devotion to Krishna. So, anyway, so these are some hints how to get detached from the material world. Just look at the deities. Pancharatra ki vidhi. So, any questions or comments? Comments, questions, problems, issues? We touched upon several topics in class. Yeah.
I have one question regarding spreading or sharing this knowledge with others.
Yeah.
The last years I have encountered the same problem over and over, speaking to highly educated women.
Yeah.
Business women, lawyers.
Yeah.
And the response I get when they read a little bit, it's like, you know, the philosophy is okay, but you know, it's a little bit chauvinistic.
A little bit.
You can encounter verses like women are less intelligent.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I try to defend this position. They say, okay, do we have any female initiating gurus in your movement? And I say, how to defend this position that this knowledge or this culture?
It's very difficult. I can tell you that. However, many years ago, the GBC did pass a resolution that there should be footnotes in the books, and the BBT refused to accept that. So the BBT is not directly under the GBC direction. So, and I was one, of course, one of the persons who voted for that resolution. It's very difficult to explain. I mean, you can use somewhat of the explanation I gave today about the women need to be protected. So that's really the context. It's not, when we use the word intelligence, I mean, women can be better than men at many things. And, you know, it's not a question of material intelligence or spiritual intelligence. And Prabhupada also said when a woman takes up Krishna consciousness, she becomes more intelligent. Prabhupada was joking one time. He said the brain grows. I mean, obviously, physically, the brain doesn't grow when you take up Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, we'd all have swelled heads, you know. We'd look like some aliens, you know, like you'd see depictions of aliens with big heads. You know, they're more, the women are equal. They can do things equally as well. They can manage as equally as well as men. They can preach sometimes even better than men because they, women are more adept at language skills in general. I mean, there's exceptions. You know, there's always exceptions to rules like this. So, and, in modern society, the women in general don't accept protection because they've been exploited by the men. So the men are, in one sense, less intelligent than the women because they're so cruel and exploitative. And they take advantage of someone's soft-heartedness. So I wouldn't say women are less intelligent. They're more soft-hearted. And the men are less intelligent because they take advantage of that. So just a question of your perspective like that. So there's different ways to explain it. I mean, it's hard. I mean, dealing with our the preaching to Western young people, which I'm really involved in, because we have this thing, I can't say Krishna Western class, but anyway, we have this preaching initiative. PI, preaching initiative, that's what we call it. Krishna Bhakti, we'll give it a different name, just so I don't get in trouble. So we have a preaching initiative, and I'm dealing regularly. You know, I go to the programs, I'm interacting with the people who are coming to the preaching initiative, and we have this question come up all the time, and it's a very delicate question, yeah. It's very, very delicate. I mean, how to... Therefore, when we go through the Bhagavad Gita, we actually have, you know, we guide people through the Bhagavad Gita. It's hard. It is definitely hard. I mean, it's something we got to deal with. Because sometimes when people read that, immediately, less intelligent, I'm out of here. Or people come into a temple where the women have to, we mentioned this the other day, stand in the back of the temple room. Could you imagine that? Stand in the back. It's almost like in America we used to have racism. Well, we still do, but it was more prominent. So that we had buses, and the people with black skin had to be in the back of the bus. And there was different bathrooms, you know, whites only and blacks only bathrooms. And it's just like, it's just not right. Because everyone's a spirit soul. So anyway, so to understand intelligence... And the right, what Prabhupada means by intelligence and the right perspective is important. So you have to redefine or define in people's minds what is meant by intelligence. It's hard. It's a challenge. But I haven't seen people leave because of that if it's explained properly. That's we're dealing with university students all the time, and these ladies are extremely intelligent. You know, they can run circles around me, and I'm a man. I am this body. So, I'm a sannyasi, I'm a man. I'm a GBC, I'm a guru. You know, all these nice designations you get in the Hare Krishna movement, it's great, isn't it? This is better than... Before joining them, I could be a better chauvinist in the Hare Krishna movement than I could be outside the movement. I mean, sometimes I even joke with my mother. My mother asks me about the position of women in the movement, and I just tell her they're just meant to cook and keep quiet. And my mother's an educated person, you know, extremely intelligent, and she gets really angry, and I enjoy getting her angry. All right, so any other questions? Yes.
My question is, I can get this doubt now for some time. I'm wondering how to understand it. But why did Srila Prabhupada already in the beginning make women gurus? Why is it needed now?
Prabhupada didn't make any gurus. He didn't make any men or women gurus. Prabhupada said this, the GBC should decide these things. Prabhupada appointed certain people to initiate on his behalf when he was present, and then Prabhupada said, after he left the planet, the disciples who were qualified, and he wanted both men and women, Prabhupada said, I want all my disciples, boys and girls at that time, because there weren't any men and women in the movement. It was like that, you know, it was like kindergarten, Hare Krishna kindergarten. So Prabhupada said, I want all my disciples, you know, boys and girls, to become gurus, qualified. Prabhupada made that statement years before he left the planet. And then as far as appointing, Prabhupada did not appoint. That's a misunderstanding. I think that's taught in the disciple course, isn't it? That Prabhupada didn't appoint. Do you teach that? He didn't appoint gurus. Prabhupada said his disciples could become guru. That part, it's not part of it. Well, when I do the disciple course, I present it. Because that's really what happened. He didn't appoint anybody. And there was this misunderstanding, and that's why the world was apportioned in different ways, you know, the Zonal Acharya system. If Prabhupada wanted only these people, it was actually quite painful for the rest of us, because these people were taken as the next Acharyas, and the rest of us had to become their disciples, even though they were our God-brothers like that. And I remember going to Mayapur, and there were these pictures. There was the Chaitanya or Prabhupada tree with Prabhupada in the top and only these 11 people. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, I'm also part of the disciplic succession. So, in other words, it's not an exclusive thing that Prabhupada indicated should be. Prabhupada wanted the GBC to decide these things. And that's what the GBC is doing. And gradually we're defining it in a better and better way. What's that? I don't know. I not agree. My philosophy is to be open about everything. I don't like the mushroom philosophy. To keep people in the dark about things. You know, if anyone has any questions, I mean, I have to be completely transparent myself. And I like to tell people about the history. I mean, you can go on the internet right now, iskondesiretree.com. Go to Ravindra Swarup Prabhu's lectures. He's a great scholar. And hear about this one course called The Hidden History of ISKCON. Anyone listen to that? Yeah. Yeah, so you get all the interesting, not so nice things, right? So, you know, we should be open. I don't believe in, I mean, of course, we don't start talking about these things like in a newspaper interview, say, you know, this happened. You know, but amongst devotees, we should be aware about the history so that we can be protected also about being bewildered or cheated, because, you know, many times, even in the movement, there'll be, like Prabhupada said, Kali Chela. They may be someone who's not actually a devotee in the movement sometimes, or someone who's bewildered, or someone who's just like under the modes, giving the wrong instructions. So we should be independently thoughtful, Prabhupada said. This is in the Bhagavad Gita too. Prabhupada said, absurd inquiries and blind following is condemned. So we should be thoughtful, understand the history, understand our philosophy. Of course, we'll be challenged too, and by people, they'll ask us about these things. And then we'll just become bewildered thinking, huh, I didn't know that. I've been in the movement 35 years and nobody told me anything like that. So, you know, knowledge is protection. Like another quote, of course, is you should study history because history repeats itself, and if you don't study history, you'll be making the same mistakes over and over again. So I not only study the history of ISKCON, but also the sociology of religious organizations. I was talking to someone yesterday outside of ISKCON, and he was in a different religious organization. He was telling me they're still in what they call the charismatic phase of the movement. Charismatic means the original founder is there, and he's just enthusing. Everybody's working together, you know, kumbaya. And and I said to him, yes, that's a phase. And he was saying, you know, we're actually better than ISKCON one sense. Now, he didn't say that, but he indicated that. I said, look, this is a different phase. Like 50 years from now, you're going to be going through what we're going through right now. So if you study the sociology, I mean, not that everybody needs to do that, but those of us who are taking the position of leadership should understand the sociology and psychology of religious societies, so we can understand things from a different perspective and not get bewildered when things happen. Because things will happen, and things are happening. There will be challenges, and we will face the challenges, and our movement will go forward and grow bigger and bigger and bigger. And ultimately, we're going to take over the world. When I joined the movement, I thought it would happen within 5 years. Isn't it? I mean, probably none of you thought that way. But in the beginning days, Prabhupada was there. Anything could happen. You know, in the space of a few years, we had thousands of devotees, hundreds of temples. Wow, we're going to elect someone to be president of the United States by 1979. You know, Prabhupada even encouraged that thought. He said about one particular individual, his name was Balavanta. He said he's going to be president of the United States. So, or Prabhupada would go to different countries and say, this is going to be the first Krishna conscious country. He said that in several countries. So, you know, hard to have several countries being the first Krishna conscious country. You know, Fiji and anyway, so many countries he said that in. And so all of it's got to do is taking over the world. But it's going to take several centuries. And, you know, you all have to be willing to come back. As devotees, not as demons or not as Kanishtha adhikaris, but as pure devotees to come back to actually change the face of the, you know, as the Bhagavatam says, to create a revolution in the misdirected lives of an impious civilization. Tadvag visargo janataka biplabo yasmin pratisloka mabadavachapi namananantasha yisho nikataniyat srinvanti gayanti sadhava. So that's the purpose of our movement. It's not just to have a small group of people where we're happy. It's to take over the world. But it'll happen in stages. Right now we're in the post-charismatic phase. You know, that means the original followers of Prabhupada, you know, like myself, like, you know, I'm thinking I'm so great because I was Prabhupada's direct disciple. Anyway, and I expect everyone to worship me. But anyway, so... So it was like, if you look at Christianity, it was like that with the original followers of Jesus Christ, you know, the apostles. So that's the post-charismatic phase. And then you have the institutional phase. Anyway, there's different phases. And we're going through sociology of religion 101 right now, which happens in every religious society. But what we have is different is a complete scientific philosophy and practice that is given to us by the founder Acharya, that has been recorded unlike any other religion in the history of mankind. It, you know, we have Prabhupada's direct recordings, direct words. You know, what they have in Christianity is they don't really know if Jesus Christ actually said that or didn't say that. And it's controversy. In the Bible, Paul says, well, you don't have to do anything. Jesus saves you. And then you have other Mark and Luke who say, no, you have to act properly. So there's all this controversy. With Prabhupada, there's no controversy about the Siddhanta. Maybe some controversy about how you should dress, you know, where you should have a sikha in the back of your head or in the front of your head, you know. That, you know, these are details. But there's basically no controversy about, you know, who Krishna is, what the Siddhanta is. So we have something that's really super valuable, and our structure will follow, the structure of the society, the institution will follow the path practically, sociologically, you know, of other institutions. You know, we're not unique in that regard. I mean, the sociology or the institutional structures, it's something that's can understood even from a perspective of a sociologist. Okay, I think we have to end because it's time for prasadam and I've spoken too long. Okay, all glories to His divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, ki jai.